You're listening to The Lost Art of Three Friends Breathing New Life Back into Past Culture. Sorely missed and long since departed. Come on down. You're the next listener on The Lost Art of.
I don't know why we do sound checks.
There's just a solid blue bar.
I'm Jason, by the way, in case you forgot the ridiculous
and
one.
And I'm Matt. Sorry for your ears with Jason speaking as Rod Roddy from The Price is
I'm
Right.
I'm Mark Goodson, television production.
And I'm Luke, and I'm going to try to make sure that doesn't blow out your speakers.
Can you guess what we're going to talk about today?
So, welcome back, Matt. I was not really here last time, only my coughs and a couple of stats.
I didn't really miss you. I think that your replacement was just as good, if not better. So
quite informative.
I agree. But also, it has been almost a month since we've recorded.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. Life happens, man. It just, so apologies to our listeners for only getting one episode in March. We'll give you five episodes in April.
Yeah, I do not stand behind that guarantee.
So I do have a couple of corrections. YouTube rabbit holes answered a couple of questions for me. Well, this isn't a correction. This is just, how did I not know this? We've talked about the band Toto several times on here before. Just learned that their lead singer is the son of John Williams, the composer who does every Steven Spielberg movie.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he did Indiana Jones, Star Wars. He did Harry Potter. He did Jaws. He did, I don't know, every Jurassic Park, like classic movie score.
Home Alone.
John Williams did.
Did you say Star Wars?
Yeah, I did say Star Wars. Yeah, did he do Home Alone?
Did he do Harry Potter, or was that Danny Elfman?
There are like eight Harry Potters, I think.
Well, the main theme.
We'll correct this on the next episode. Anyway, so that was
job
one of my corrections. I also did not know. Well, he was not the singer when the band recorded Africa, but he joined in the late '80s, and he's still their singer.
Ooh,
so
runs in a family, then.
And also, I want to mention the mountain Kilimanjaro. I had mentioned, I don't even remember what episode, I'm sure the Toto one, that anybody could climb Mount Kilimanjaro. It's like the easiest big mountain to climb. You just have to walk really slow. Watched a video on a guy who climbed it, and I was kind of right. It's not like Everest where you have to have the gear and like climb the ice faces and over these deep crevices, but it still takes 9 days, and you're still sleeping in the freezing cold. Like the guy in the video got frostbite on his toe, but it wasn't like a strenuous hike as far as like dangerous. Ooh. But it still took 9 days and was freezing cold.
No, I'm good.
So yeah, I think
I'm good.
Good
with that. I'm not even. Yeah.
John Williams did both Home Alone and Harry Potter.
Alrighty then.
Okay.
So that correction did not have to wait till the next episode.
And also, the John Williams' son wrote Lopty Neck, the song in Return of the Jedi before the special edition.
Oh, yeah, the good one.
Right.
I have no idea. I mean, I know Return of the Jedi, but I don't know what Lopty Neck is.
Let me tell you, it's the only musical number that I can remember in...
The little flute.
Oh, I don't remember. I don't remember what it was. I just
in Jabba's Palace, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Because that one that they put in the special edition was just awful.
Not good.
We all learned a little something tonight, boys.
That is true.
And what we learned may be useful on a game show if we're ever getting on one.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Way to pull us back in.
Well, so we had mentioned we were going to talk about game shows, and I thought, oh, yeah, this will be a fun episode. And then I started looking into game shows, and I thought, this might be a whole new topic that we can come back to. There's been a lot of game shows we can pull from.
Yeah.
So I think all three of us kind of took different directions with this. I did some research on some classic game show hosts, and I want to talk about some game shows that either people have forgotten about or never really knew about. And I think, Jason, you were going to...
Yeah, I'm covering like some of the most notable cheaters in game show history, as well as some of my personal favorite...
Cheaters in game show history.
And the, like... obscure, some of the more obscure game shows that people might have forgotten about, and just general game show memories. So,
well, I have a question for you before we get started. Was the first game show on television or on the radio?
Since you're giving me a choice, I'm going to say radio.
I'm going to say probably radio.
Trick question. The first game show on both television and radio premiered the same year, 1938. Television show was called Spelling Bee, and the radio show was called Information, Please.
Okay.
How many people had a TV in 1938? Seven?
That's a good question. I think that was the same year as the first television broadcast.
what, Hitler speaking to the troops or whatever?
Yeah, I think so.
That was literally the first television broadcast.
Oh, I know. That's why I think it was that year.
Wow. Yeah, because they are, the joke is that, you know,
that'll be the first thing
that aliens see if they're like watching, because it's literally the very first signal that has gone out, visual signal.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And Jason, were you going to talk about the quiz show scandal of the 1950s?
No, I was going to leave all the scandalous stuff to you.
Oh.
So I should also just mention bad timing yet again on our behalf.
Oh. We're going to talk about Alex Trebek, aren't we?
Right. Well, I just wanted, and I'm sure we'll get into Jeopardy because I want to talk about him later, but just, you know, he has just announced that he's been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, and yes. he seems very positive about the 1% chance that he's going to beat this. But he looks actually really healthy.
Mm-hmm. He does. Still.
And he's back recording Jeopardy.
Yeah, the shows that they're showing now are recorded before he made the announcement, but he has done a couple of you know, things at the beginning of the show, thanking his fans for checking in on him or whatever. And he looks very healthy, and he looks really good for 78.
He does.
And on that same note, the Jeopardy online test, you have to pass the test to get an audition on the show, is happening April like 11th through 13th or something. So I went ahead and signed up for that. Oh. I've done it for the past like 5 years, and they always hit me with a bunch of European history that I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, the video game and movie Oscar nominee questions I like nail, but then they're like, in 1312, this granddaughter of the third king of France,
Elizabeth Schorschmann.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. Be more specific.
No idea.
Who is Elizabeth Schorschmann?
Ah, very good.
So where do we want to start?
I was actually going to start with the 1950s, just kind of doing a quick history. The whole genre of the game show almost died out because of the quiz show scandal, which there actually was a movie in the 90s about it.
Called Quiz Show.
And in 1954, there was a Supreme Court case, the FCC versus the American Broadcasting Company. You may know them as ABC, where the Supreme Court ruled that quiz shows were not a form of gambling, and this allowed them to greatly increase the amount of prizes, including the $64,000 question. But all those big prizes also gave rise to people who wanted to cheat the system. Mm-hmm. And there was a big scandal where certain people were actually given answers in order to make the winnings and the game show more compelling. It was kind of like they wanted the person with the best story to win. One example where this did not happen was Dr. Joyce Brothers. Have you guys ever heard of her?
Oh, yeah.
She's an American psychologist, and she was became famous because she was the first woman to ever win the $64,000 question.
Oh, was she really?
And a lot of people thought during the scandal that, like, oh, well, she cheated just like all these other people. But in 1959, during one of these trials, one of the producers of the show actually admitted that, no, we didn't give her the answer. We actually convinced her to change the topic of her questions during the process of the show because we didn't think she would know anything about boxing, and she won anyway. So they actively tried to make it harder for her, and she still won. But after the game show scandal, because people weren't interested in something they thought was rigged.
Professional wrestling is...
Have you ever talked to a wrestling fan? Because a lot of them are into it.
Still real to me, damn it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Continue on.
But a lot of people stopped watching game shows with prize money because it was fake anyway, and you could pretty much tell who was going to win based on whoever had the best story. So that gave rise to another type of game show. It was really just a showcase for like the nation's top comedians, which, of course, leads me to one of my favorite game shows.
Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Okay, yeah.
Some people might not even think of that as a game show, but...
Well, no, they give you points. Yeah. They just don't matter.
This is true.
Yeah. You know that show still comes on, by the way?
Yeah.
And I think
like
I mentioned
new
this.
Episodes or, yeah. Or really?
Yeah, because Wayne Brady and Colin, whatever his name is. Well, Wayne Brady actually looks the same, but yeah.
Colin Mockery.
Mockery, yeah. He's getting old, and Ryan Stiles is still on there. Yeah. I mean, it's the same people.
Hmm. Well, all of them were all on the British version of the show before it even came to America.
And that's what we used to watch on Comedy Central. It came on at noon every day, and I think I mentioned this in the summer break. If I caught that on, I was like, yes, I didn't oversleep past noon.
Past noon?
Yeah.
Well, I was surprised to learn that Stephen Fry was on there. I would not thought him to be on Whose Line Is It Anyway?
You know what? Now that I'm thinking back, I can definitely see big, tall, goofy guy on there. It wasn't Ryan Stiles and was much more British.
Right. But I did. I looked up some YouTube videos of Whose Line Is It Anyway? And you can't watch a single clip without just dying laughing. One of the ones, so the game show is they play different games, and they're all just basically improv exercises, and there are comedians on there, and then the host gives them points based on whatever they feel like.
The host, for a long time, was Drew Carey.
Yes.
Who, we'll talk about him later. Very lucky dude.
Yes. So one of the games was called From a Hat, and the host would just pull suggestions out of a hat, and it would just be strange things to borrow from your neighbor, or what's on TV in hell. And I watched a clip last night, and what's on TV in hell was the category, and Colin Mochrie went up there, and he went, next up on Butt Cracks of the Rich and Famous.
Yeah, they're just real quick, like one-liners.
Yeah.
I also love the singing ones, where they're like, all right, and now we need you to sing songs about the left foot while you're driving a car in the style of disco.
What's funny about that is they actually had an improv pianist. Who would be like, okay, you want me to do a disco song if it was Dr. Dre? Okay.
Yeah, and then she would just come up with it on the spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember when we were in New York, we went to see Second City Improv?
It's a dog-eat-dog world, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear.
Yes, but do you remember what the girl said when she's trying to get... So this guy, he was in white tighty-whities, and he had a giant dog bone down the side of his pants. And the girl was trying to guess, is a common phrase, and it's dog eat dog world, I'm wearing milk bone underwear. Mm-hmm. But she goes, I've got a misplaced boner? That's like the only thing I remember about that whole thing.
That's pretty funny. The only thing I remember is the tagline.
Yeah. And when we left, there was a guy out front, and this was in the middle of New York City in the 90s, and there was traffic just going up and down. And he had like a little puppy dog just running loose. And I'm thinking, the dog's going to go in the street. But it didn't. I'm sure it's dead now. It was 23 years ago.
Well, I imagine it was. Yeah, I didn't. So, was that really Second City Improv?
I think it.
Because Second City's in Chicago.
It wasn't Second City.
Okay, I was going to say because that's.
I've probably still got the brochure somewhere. I don't know what it is.
Okay.
Do you have any other stuff to mention about
Whose Line?
Yeah, that's funny because I wouldn't have thought of that as a game show, but that kind of shows you how broad that topic can be.
The only reason that existed at all was because of the quiz show scandal of the 50s, and I just found that interesting.
Yeah. Well, but you said a way for comedians, and when you said that, I was thinking of like Match Game or To Tell the Truth, like
or Tic Tac Toe, or what was that?
Tic Tac Toe,
Hollywood Squares,
yeah, where they have like a panel of celebrities and they ask a question and they always say a joke before they give the real answer.
Right?
Yeah, there's like dozens of those shows.
Yeah. Well, and I was wondering about that. I guess at that point, you don't even really have to pay these people a whole lot because you're paying them in exposure. You still have to pay them.
You still have to pay them, yeah. But, I mean, it's probably like an appearance, like $1,500 an episode, which is a lot of money to me. But, you know, if you're making $1 million a year as a comedian.
Now, who was always center square?
Well, Whoopi Goldberg was in the 90s, but before that, it was like Paul Lynn or
Like Bobcat Goldthwait. Not center square, just on the show. And Gilbert Godfrey.
Oh, yeah, he was on there a lot. I wanted to, before I started talking about a specific show, I kind of wanted to go and talk about just some game show hosts, classic game show hosts. First, I'm going to talk about Alex Trebek because he's kind of in the news. And also, I read something that he's the seventh most trusted person in America. Somewhere, he's like between Bill Clinton and Jon Stewart. I mean, it's like...
Wait, hold on.
Like people,
Bill Clinton and Jon Stewart are only Alex Trebek apart? In trustworthiness?
I made up those names. I don't know who was between. And I didn't see who number one was. But the point is that like everybody trusts Alex Trebek
right, for
whatever reason.
Well, don't get me wrong. I think Jon Stewart is very trustworthy.
Right. Yeah, maybe it's Jon Stewart and somebody else.
Okay.
And I actually want to mention, I hadn't thought about this in forever, but the point of Jeopardy is they ask a question and then they give you the answer and then you say the question. That's like the gimmick behind it. So I thought it would be really funny because Alex Trebek, the way he speaks is very smug. And I thought it would be
funny
to re-edit the videos to where the contestant asked the question and then Alex Trebek really smugly read the answer.
That's pretty funny.
So I made this short video and I put it out. It's probably on YouTube. But it was like, you know, this 16th president of the United States, blah, blah, blah. But I did it the other way. So the contestant would say,
Who is Abraham Lincoln?
And then Alex would be like, this 16th president of the United. And it just, it sounded really funny, but I couldn't ever get the timing down. So it sounded kind of funny, but sorry, I'm getting sidetracked. Alex Trebek was born July 22nd, 1940 in Ontario, Canada, but he has been a joint U.S.-Canadian citizen since 1998.
His father was also a Ukrainian immigrant to Canada.
All right, there you go. That was my next line here.
Oh.
But he grew up in a French and English household, speaking both languages, I assume because of his mom was Canadian. While he was in college, he worked for the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and he eventually read the national news and special events when he was a very young man. His first job as a host was Canada's Music Hop in 1963.
So I thought that was interesting, and I originally was like, oh, shoot. Alex Trebek was one of the first VJs, yeah. But then I guess it was more like a live show, and I was like, oh, he was
like American Bandstand.
A live show J, yeah. And then I realized, oh, wait, that's just a master of ceremonies.
Yeah, he's just an MC.
Yeah.
MC Trebek. And this is something, I remembered him hosting other shows other than Jeopardy. Of course, everyone knows him from that. He hosted, I'm just going to list them off, yep. Wizard of Odds, High Rollers, Double Dare.
Double Dare was good.
But it wasn't the Double Dare we know.
No, Nicolas. Two Double Dares. Yeah,
yeah,
two
I actually had to look it up. I was like, I do not remember the show.
It ended in like 79.
Right. I thought maybe, I guess there were no kids game shows in the 70s.
I would like to see Alex Trebek. Taking
Mark Summers' job. He hosted Starcade, Jeopardy, Classic Concentration, and To Tell the Truth.
He did host Classic Concentration.
And Classic Concentration is one that I liked. But of course, everyone knows him from Jeopardy. He's also been in dozens of TV shows and movies, but always as himself.
So while he was hosting Classic Concentration, Jeopardy, and To Tell the Truth, he became the first American game show host to host three shows at the same time.
And shortly after that, he became the Guinness World Record host for hosting the most episodes of a game show, with over 7,000 episodes hosted. And that was as of like 5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, dude's got it going on.
Yeah.
So, he was hosting three shows
different
at one time.
Yes.
Yeah. And just, I had a quick note here because I didn't know. Double Dare was like 20 questions. There were two contestants that were in soundproof booths, and they would each get a clue, an obscure clue, and they had to guess who a person was.
Yep.
So that sounds pretty cool to me. But
it was cool because like if you got the answer right, you could, I think, don't quote me on this. You had two options. I can't remember one, but then the other was challenge your opponent and see if they get it. And if they don't get it, then you get double the money or something like that. Then their booth turns around and they're exposed and the soundproofing is off. And then they ask, Alex would ask the opponent the question. If they don't get it, then
they have to run to a pool full of liquid and put a sponge in it and run back and fill up a cup.
Yes. While slipping on slime.
Yes.
And if they don't, they get slime dumped on their heads.
Yes.
No, but yeah.
And then since that was kind of a quick just background on Alex Trebek, I want to do one more on another classic game show host. And this is one I think everyone knows. I couldn't remember what he hosted, but I knew I watched a lot of his stuff, and it was Chuck Woolery.
Yeah.
Oh, he is the man.
And he's from Ashland, Kentucky. I did not know.
No, he is not.
Yeah, born March 16th, 1941.
Representing the KY.
Yep, before he was a game show host, he served 2 years in the Navy, and then he was a wine consultant, and then he was a sales rep for Pillsbury. Interesting life that guy had.
We'll see you in 2 and 2.
He played the bass fiddle in The Bordermen, and then later in a band called Avant Garde, which was a psychedelic pop punk band, or not pop punk, pop band.
Wait, hold on. Bass fiddle?
Yeah.
Is that a double bass or like a large fiddle?
Did not look that up.
Okay.
They just said bass fiddle. It was in a psychedelic pop band with a one-hit wonder called Naturally Stoned. Came out in 1968. He then released 5 solo records, had no success, so he turned to acting. But he still made music on the side, and he got his first job hosting a game show called Wheel of Fortune. After Merv Griffin heard him sing on The Tonight Show, which I think is funny. He got a job hosting a game show after singing on a nighttime talk show.
I think you got moxie, kid.
So it says he hosted from 1975 to 1981 when he disputed his salary. He was making $65,000 a year, which had to have been a lot of money in 1981.
In 81?
He wanted $500,000 a year.
That's a big increase.
Yeah. So the show and NBC actually agreed to the salary demands, but then Merv Griffin screwed it up because he moved the show to CBS from NBC. And then NBC got mad and says, oh, yeah, we're not going to pay him that salary then. We're just going to not renew his contract. And they replaced him with Pat Sajak.
Who's been there ever since.
He has. And
this Well, how old was Pat Sajak then? And you said in 81? 84?
Eight, 81. There might have been a break or something in the show. Because I think Sajak started in like 83, 84 or something.
Okay.
But I just want to mention, Pat Sajak has the second easiest job in the entire world. He, like, Alex Trebek has to know all these accents and pronunciations of questions and all this stuff. Vanna White has to probably not eat what she wants and exercise so she still looks thin pretty in her 60s. Yeah.
Pat Sajak, she has to walk in those heels, too.
Well, that, too. Yeah, and then Pat Sajak literally has a cue card and goes, all right, so it says here you're from Baltimore, Maryland, and you're a school teacher. All right. letter R. I mean, he literally talks 5 minutes in a 30-minute show, says nothing of interest. Gets $15 million a year.
Yeah. I mean, well, he has to walk over and talk to the camera occasionally. And
oh, that's hard. Oh, and he's got to travel around the world on the company's dime and say, beautiful Portugal, we'll be sending contestants here this week. So he's like,
I think those are back screens, but
no, some of them are like
on location.
On location.
Yeah.
So, and I said he had the second easiest job in the world. The easiest job in the world is Michael Buffer, the guy that goes, let's get ready to. Don't say it. You might get sued. He's got the trademark on it, and he charges $100.
Podcast?
Yeah, let's get rid of that. That's right. Callback. He charges $150,000 to say that one line, and he does it at every fighting sporting event and probably gets front row seats for free.
So I will say that he probably does some really crazy stuff to care for his voice, whether needed or not. I bet he does.
He's worth like $300 million from saying one line.
He's got insurance on his voice.
Oh definitely. Yeah.
But anyway, I know he's not a game show guy, but there is no easier job than saying, let's get ready to you know
what
before every sporting event.
I dare. Let's get ready. Come find me.
Well, that got edited out.
Yeah. but anyway, just real quickly on Chuck Woolery, he hosted Wheel of Fortune, Love Connection, Scrabble, The Dating Game, Greed, Lingo.
Lingo is good. I love Love Connection as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know, I forgot to look this up. So Love Connection is the one where there's a single person and three people behind the curtain and they're like, contestant number one, blah, blah, blah. There was a serial killer.
No, that's The Dating Game, I think.
Oh, is it The Dating
Game? Yeah, Love Connection was a guest will be on the couch with Chuck and then. On the video screen, you'll have three male contestants or females, depending on who the guest on the couch is. And then through a series of questions, the contestant one on the couch will pick a date, and then they'll go on a date, and then Chuck will do a like update episode later. It's like, you might remember Tiffany and Eric from, well, here's how their date went, and then it'll be either really bad or really good.
Never in between.
Yeah, but no, I was going to
actually
mention, I don't have that on here because it's not what I've, no, but yeah, that needs to be.
Yeah, I've got it here.
Yeah, okay.
So The Dating Game is what I'm thinking of, where there's they do a male and a female contestant, and then there's three people behind the curtain. And they'll say, contestant number two, if you were to take me out on a date, what would we do? And then, you know, they answer, and then they choose who they want to date. So there was a guy named Rodney Alcala. And he won. He was a contestant, and he won and went on a date with this girl. Shortly after that, in 1978, he was convicted of the murders of four women and a child. Before he was on the show, in 1968, he'd been convicted of raping an 8-year-old girl and somehow did not go to prison for the rest of his life and ended up winning a game show. So there's like video online of this literal serial killer winning a date with a girl on this game show. Mm-hmm.
That sounds about right. Mm-hmm. The 60s and 70s were a different time.
Yep.
It wasn't like today where we literally have a government agent listening to this show. Everybody say hi to FBI Bob.
Sir, we are they. All right, Jason, sorry, we've been jibber-jabbing. Tell us a story.
Well, I guess I'm going to go into the some of the most notable cheaters in game show history. And because like all games, it's always the bad apples. And Matt or Luke, if you guys have anything that I don't.
Like Ken Jennings.
Like Ken Jennings, no.
Like Winston the computer.
Winston?
Is one of the only people to beat Ken Jennings in Jeopardy.
No, it's not Winston. What is it?
It was Winston.
Oh, it's, no, it's.
You sure?
It's not Winston.
It's a classier name than that.
Ain't no name classier than Winston.
No, this guy.
Watson.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
One of the most popular ones in game show history was Michael Larson. And this is, he, in 1984, he was a part-time ice cream truck driver, and he appeared on...
Pressure Luck.
On Pressure Luck. I was thinking Whammy for some. I mean that's...
When, as a kid, that's all we cared about. Yeah, no whammy. Stop.
Pressure Luck, yeah.
Is he the guy that figured out the pattern?
Well, he did. And so here's the thing. He got a whammy on his first spin and had to wait the turns of the other two contestants. And then he just kept amassing, like, money and prizes. He never hit another whammy. And by the end of the show, he'd won a record-shattering $110,000. I'm sorry, $110,237. So, according to Priceonomics, his time at the board was so long, CBS ended up splitting the broadcast into two separate episodes. But the thing about it was revealed that he, before he went on the show, had recorded probably hundreds of episodes of Pressure Luck and studied it.
Well, first, you need to explain kind of what... So, what we're talking about, there is... The contestant is in the center of the screen.
Oh, yeah.
And around the edge of the screen are little squares.
Yes, the board is lit up, and there's prizes and money. And whammies. And then whammies, but the lights will go around, and it's like... And then you have this buzzer that you hit and stop it wherever the lit up frame goes around. And if it lands on a whammy, then you've lost your turn, as well as all your prizes and money that you've...
But a really awesome animation.
You get to see a little cute animation.
You do get to see the whammy, which he is pretty cool, but he's a little...
Oh, yeah.
And, but so he, yeah, so, but then, of course, if you land on prizes, like, you got a toaster, or, you know. But, so he had studied it. He had memorized when and when not to hit that buzzer. Like...
To me, that's not even cheating.
It's not cheating. That's just knowing your stuff. And so,
also, I feel like that's their fault for having the same pattern every
right.
time.
That's the thing. Yeah. I was like, I wouldn't think that you would be able to memorize something like
reading
that. But
the encyclopedia,
I guess,
before going on Jeopardy is not cheating.
No.
You know?
Right. So he had videotaped all those episodes, memorized the patterns. And so even the former daytime programming exec for CBS at that time, Bob Bowden, he even told TV Land had a show called Myths and Legends, and that was on there. And he was like, there was a school of thought that because he had cheated, he wasn't entitled to his money. But
Jason just put up air quotes.
I did, cheated, quote unquote. But he said, you know what? We all just determined that he hadn't cheated. He was just smarter than CBS. So, yeah, I don't see anything wrong with it there. But that's one of your most, when you think game show cheaters, that's probably the first one that comes to everybody's mind.
That actually reminds me, and everybody should watch this. It's only about 70 minutes long. It's on Amazon Prime. It's a movie, a documentary called The Perfect Bid. And I just quickly will tell you about it. So I don't know if you all ever watched How I Met Your Mother, but there's an episode where Barney, played by Neil Patrick Harris,
does something with a pineapple.
Well, there is an episode with that, yeah. But no, this is called it. He goes on Price is Right, and he just he wins. He knows everything about it, and it's like really farcical. And they're like, "Wow, you knew everything!"
Right?
He's like, "Yeah, I used to watch this show every day with my dad, and I just memorized everything." So I'm thinking, "Yeah, well, that's impossible." So this dude in the 70s and 80s
did that.
He made spreadsheets. He watched every day, and he made spreadsheets with the prices of every single product on there. And sometimes, like, the cars would have different prices depending on the options, and he even tracked that as well. And he just literally, all he did was study the sheet. So he lived in like either Northern California. He was several hours from LA where they filmed Price is Right. But he gets down there, and I don't know, in the early 80s or something, and he's in the audience, and he doesn't get called up, but he's yelling the prices out, because, you know, the whole thing is like, you know, they're always looking in the crowd for somebody that knows the price, and he's yelling prices out, and somehow he gets this guy to like listen to him, and the dude ends up winning like everything. And then he comes back a couple of years later and does it again. And when they have the four contestants and they're like, name the price, and they're all, you know, giving the prices, this dude's yelling it out. And like somehow Bob Barker gets like, he's like, sir, you just gave him the exact price of that product. And then the next person came up and he gave them the exact price. And he does it like six times in a row. And Bob Barker keeps calling him out saying, whatever his name is, I guess you watch a lot of Price is Right. So he keeps going back to the show like a dozen times, and he finally gets on the show and wins a bunch of stuff. But then he finally, I mean, this doesn't ruin anything, it's still fun to watch, but he doesn't get on the show, but he's sitting next to the wife of a guy who's a contestant, and he tells her, he's like, make eye contact with your husband, let him know I know the price of every single product on here. Just tell him to look out here and listen to me. And he gets like everything right. He goes to the showcase at the end,
right?
And he gets it to the dollar exactly
of like all 10 items or whatever,
all of them.
Yeah,
and they had to like do this long investigation. Like, this dude is totally cheating. And he literally had just memorized these spreadsheets he'd had for like 15 years.
Well, okay, because the next one that I'm about to talk about, it could or could not be the same guy, Terry Neese.
That guy looks familiar, but
okay, because this sounds remarkably like what you're talking about. Basically, in 2008, and this is already when Drew Carey had taken over, a man by the name of Terry Keese was he apparently an analytical genius.
Different guy, but I remember this guy as well.
Well, okay, so this guy, this Terry Neese guy, looks like he had only hit the to the dollar on the Showcase Showdown. Mm-hmm. So he had put in a bid of $23,743 during the Showcase Showdown, and it was exact. What had happened was there was a former Price is Right contestant named Ted Slauson.
Yep.
That's him. That's the guy that made the spreadsheet.
Yep, that's the guy.
So this was another incident of him. Yeah, he's in the crowd, and he's yelling out the he's giving him hand signals and yelling out the prices.
Yep.
And so this Ted Slauson guy, they had actually opened an investigation on it and thought that the two had been like.
Yeah,
in cahoots with each other over this. But
they literally just met that day.
Yeah, and like, he was just yelling out, you know.
Yeah, but come on, you're in the Price is Right audience, and some guy comes up to you, and he's like, "Hey, if you go up there, I know the price of everything." I feel like you give it a shot one time, and you're like, "Oh, I mean, hey, you got that one right."
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the guy, he was a legend. That Theodore Slauson guy, he was a legend. Like all the producers knew him. Like he showed up, and they're like, "Hey, Theodore,
Oh boy."
Yeah.
But again, I don't think that's. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, if they're allowing you to look out to the crowd for
that's not cheating.
I kind of that's the same as like card counting in Vegas. It's like they don't call it cheating, but they don't let you do it.
Well. If they catch you doing it, you get kicked out, but I don't think they keep your winnings.
No, because, I mean, it's one of those, if you have the ability to do that, then whatever, but if we could catch you doing it, we're not going to let you continue.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, he got to he got to keep his winnings, this guy, Terry Neese, so I thought that might have been what you were talking about there.
Yeah, it's called The Perfect Bid. It's on Amazon Prime. It's 70 minutes long. It's cool. Well worth the investment.
All right.
It's very entertaining.
Luke had already talked about the quiz show thing.
I didn't really talk about any of the actual scandal. I just
kind
of glossed over it. Okay.
So in 1988, a man named Kerry D. Ketchum won $58,650 on Super Password, making him the largest one-time winner in history, or the largest one-game winner in history.
Right? It's like 600,000?
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty much, yeah. No, 60,000.
Oh, whew.
Big difference.
Yeah, close to 60,000.
By order of magnitude.
Yeah. So what he did was when he went in to pick up his prize money at the show's offices, they had Secret Service agents there waiting to arrest him. So what he didn't end up doing was when he went on the show, he used an alias by the name of Patrick Quinn, which was an old college professor of his. But he was also on the run while he was on the show from fraud charges that he had in Alaska and Indiana. He pled guilty to two counts of mail fraud. And all kinds of stuff going on, but he got 5 years in prison.
So what I find interesting about that is that when you said the Secret Service, I was thinking, what was he, a counterfeiter or something? Because I didn't realize they watched out for fraud or took care of that. I know apparently they do counterfeiting, but
yeah, I have no idea.
Okay,
I guess they didn't catch the serial killer guy either.
Well, that's not really their job. That's more, I assume, FBI. According to movies I've seen.
Yeah, I've seen some movies with FBI in it.
So, yeah, I guess this is where he had those other fraud charges. They caught up with him and realized it was him. And then there was another one here that was good. It was this was on the...
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. It was the British edition of the show. And this is the one I'm talking about. Is that what you're thinking too? In 2001, a guy by the name of Charles Ingram had his wife and a friend of theirs in the crowd. And... he had placed them in the crowd and, you know, instructed them to sort of...
Were they, like, blinking?
They were, like, clearing their throat and coughing and doing all that.
Yeah, anytime that the guy would read, like, and see, and they'd be like...
right,
Yeah.
So, all three of them were found guilty of procuring the execution of a valuable security by deception.
Yeah, now that, to me, is cheating.
That is cheating.
Yeah.
So they got, he and his wife got 18 months each, and then their friend that was with them got a year, and as well as they got fined, and then So this guy, he was an Army major, and he was stripped of his title by the Army board after 17 years of service
for
cheating on the show as well. So yeah, just some, those are some notable ones. I'm sure there's more. And
can we just say when Whose Line, or I keep saying Whose Line Is It Anyway, when Who Wants to Be a Millionaire premiered in 98, 99,
it was like the biggest thing ever.
It was, it came on like three nights a week, and it was always the top show on TV.
I always enjoyed watching it.
Well, it had Regis. I mean, who doesn't like Regis?
That's true.
Everyone, who doesn't like it? Regis?
But you know, though, too.
I don't know. That was not a very good Regis.
That was not a good,
neither one of those were very good Regis.
Regis Philbin.
That reminds me. I have to say something about him in a second. But once Who Wants to Be a Millionaire premiered, I think every single game show that has come out since then, primetime, has had that same stage set up with like the dark with the lights at like two. Every show, like The Weakest Link had that wall, the wall, the
what's it called?
Let's Make a Deal.
Let's Make a Deal.
No, not Let's Make a Deal.
It sort of had this.
The Suitcase.
Well, it was a little.
Is it Let's Make a Deal, the Suitcase Show?
Yeah, with Howie Mandel.
Yeah, they all have the, they could be filmed on the same set.
Spelling Bee or the Wayne Brady Hour, whatever that show was called.
Yeah. But when you said Regis Philbin, so there's a funny clip on YouTube of I think it was an Army Week on Wheel of Fortune, and the clue was something like host of Regis and Kelly, Regis Philbin was like the answer, and it was completely spelled out on the screen. Completely spelled out, and they had to go through all the contestants like three times because they could not pronounce his name. They'd be like Regis Philbin, like nope, that's wrong. Who is Regis Philbin? Nope, that's wrong. I mean, it was like five or six times, and then finally somebody got it right, and he's like, good Lord, finally somebody could read the board. I mean, it's completely uncovered.
Yeah.
I'll have to find that clip.
I'm gonna make I guess that. That's harder to say than Pat Sajak? I don't know.
I guess so.
Yeah, sure.
So I want to mention a couple more hosts, and I apologize. These aren't really Matt's stats. This isn't really a good episode for that.
Bom, bom.
But if you want to do the theme song, feel free. Our listeners demand it. So I think if you were to ask people to name five game show hosts, I think that this person would always be in the top two or three. It was just Bob Barker.
Bob Barker.
He is a legend.
Is he still alive?
He is still alive.
And he was born December 12th, 1923. So he's pushing 100.
He's almost 100.
Yeah, he actually, 96. A couple months ago, there was a health scare. And my brother, I remember I was, Jason, Bob Barker's in the hospital, man. It ain't looking good. And I'm like, oh, no. No, he's fine.
He's so old. His wife died of old age in 1981. I don't know. I think she died of cancer.
Oh, okay.
That was it. Poor joke. But he was born in Darrington, Washington, but he grew up on the Rosebud Indian Reservation in Mission, South Dakota. And he's an official member of the Sioux tribe, but he's only 1/8. So that was something I did not know. He went to Drury University on a basketball scholarship. He was a World War II Navy fighter pilot. And after the war, he got a degree in economics.
What an amazing guy.
Yeah.
Robert Barker.
Of all of the things that Robert I learned about him, this is the one I think that surprised me the most. If you ask, who's Bob Barker? Oh, he hosted The Price is Right forever. Yes, he did. From 1972 to 2007. 35 years. Mm-hmm. Before he hosted Price is Right, he hosted Truth or Consequence for 18 years. So
that was his second career.
His second career was The Price is Right.
So he always had white hair while hosting Price is Right? Wait, hold on. No, 1973, that's what you said?
He dark hair on The Price is Right.
72. So he was 49 when he got that job?
So check this out, because it's funny you mention his white hair. He was the first TV host to let his hair go gray and not dye it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was like a thing like, oh my gosh, Bob. And then everyone, like Alex Trebek followed suit and some other guys.
Bob Barker looked like a Q-tip, though.
Well, yeah. But I mean, when we were growing up, he did for sure.
Oh, okay.
So when he got the hosting job on The Price is Right, it had been a show before. From 1956 to 1965, it was hosted by Bill Cullen, who I don't know. But
was a vampire in the Northwest Territory.
Yeah, he had a son named Edward.
I think so.
Yeah. He apparently was a legendary game show host, hosted a bunch of things before probably, when our parents were too young to even remember it. He became a producer on The Price is Right, and he made some changes. He insisted they only have American cars and American products on the show, and nothing they had could be tested on animals. And he's famous for, at the end of every episode, saying, be sure to spay and neuter your pets. Yeah.
Help control the pet population.
There you go.
This is not about Bob Barker, it's about The Price is Right, but I found this really interesting. Is the only surviving daytime game show. There were... throughout the years, there have been dozens.
There was never a lull.
Like Hollywood Squares.
No, right.
I'm talking this. Have they ever showed reruns? They have stayed.
You know, it stayed on. But here's the thing. Even though it's been on, it's an hour-long show, which is also rare for a game show. They had a primetime version as well when it first came on in the 70s, and it was hosted by someone different than Bob Barker. He hosted the daytime, and there was a nighttime.
And the daytime outlived it?
Yes, and not only to outlive it, it has been the number one show in its time slot for 25 years and has more than twice as many viewers as the number two show.
So you say that, but the funny thing is you were talking about waking up in time to watch Whose Line Is It Anyway? Well, guess what came on at 11?
Yeah,
Price is Right. And you watch Price is Right before Whose Line.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, and so me and my friend Jay in 2003, we went to L.A. for spring break. We're like, we're going to go in on the Price is Right. And we found out you had to go at 3 o'clock in the morning and wait in line to hope to get on there. So we didn't do it.
So was it taped? It was taped live then?
Well, no. I'm sorry. They tape it and then they air it like months later.
Okay.
Because my friend Jay, who actually lives in Southern California now, he's been on the show twice, not as a contestant, but in the crowd. And you can just see him like yelling out answers and stuff. But yeah, I mean, they film it and he's like, I'm going to be on The Price is Right on this day. So I still kind of want to go on there, even though it's no longer Bob Barker.
That's a bucket list.
Well, it's Drew Carey.
Drew Carey, I think, does
he does do a good job.
I mean, those are big shoes to fill, but Drew has made it his. You know, he's really done.
I may be in the minority here, and I have nothing against Drew Carey. I like the Drew Carey show. He was the least funny part of it, I thought. I thought the other characters were better.
Yeah.
He is perfectly fine as the host of The Price is Right. The dude is worth like $250 million probably. And to me, he's just not that funny. He's been very lucky.
Matt,
I'm sure he's a hard worker.
My dick batted .342 in the minors before it hurt its knee.
So there was a very funny thing, on Napster back in the day that we downloaded. It was 101 big jokes. And it was Drew Carey and some of his friends were doing these. So we don't know how many of them. He might have written all the bad ones.
That's true.
Yeah. But, he to me, is a very lucky guy. Not to diminish his work. But
you know, he was in the Marines before.
He was in the Marines.
Yeah. Oh, never mind. Is he your next guy?
No, he's not.
Okay.
I wasn't going to go into him. I know I kind of got sidetracked there, but Price is Right, great show.
My favorite, I'd say, of all game shows ever.
Because
it's not changed that much. I mean, it's really not the whole style and format and atmosphere of it. It's all the same.
It definitely has a 70s vibe,
too. It still has that, like, cheesy 70s elevator music when they're showing
the
prizes.
Glitz,
like,
and the, yeah.
You know, like, Uncle Ben's Minute Rice cooks quickly in the microwave. Blah, blah, blah. It's like,
So Drew Carey doesn't still have the corded mic, does he?
Yeah, he's still got that long, skinny microphone. It may be wireless now. But
because Bob Barker refused to go cordless. Well, they tried to go cordless several times, but he'd been doing it for 20-some-odd years, and the, like, whipping the cord around on the stage was just so much of a habit for him that, he couldn't.
He's like, I don't want to.
He said, I don't want to change it.
So that before I go into my next host, I got to say two things, one of which will be probably controversial. So me and Jay, when we were in L.A., we did go to see the Craig Kilborn late night show, and he was on before Craig Ferguson took over the show. Craig Ferguson being Drew Carey's boss on the Drew Carey show. That's all unrelated. And now it's Seth Meyers or one of, I don't know who it is now. Anyway, Craig Kilborn was the host at the time.
Who was the original host of The Daily Show.
Yes.
Okay.
And he does not seem like a nice guy to me. But so it before the show, and this is the same, any TV show, they have a warm-up comic comes out, gets the crowd all hype or whatever. And the only thing I remember that our warm-up guy said, he goes, all right, guys, if you all do a really good job and you really show Craig how much you love him, we're going to go downstairs right below this studio when the show's over, and we're going to beat the hell out of the Price is Right set. Like that was going to be our prize.
All right.
So we were in the same building, I guess, but that was it. So the controversial thing I was going to say, and I'll say it first and then I'll explain it. Game shows are kind of like my church, like my religion almost. And what I mean is, like you were saying, The Price is Right never changes. There's something about if you ask people, you know, what do you like about going to church? And Catholics, I think you hear this a lot, is I like the routine and the sameness.
It's the just consistency.
Like, no matter what is going on in the world, I know that I can go to church and it's the same routine every single Sunday.
It's
and
stable.
It is very stable. And I feel that way about game shows. You watch Wheel of Fortune, Jeopardy, The Price is Right. It is, there's no differentiation. It's the same every single time.
That's very true.
So to me, that's kind of like a almost like comfort food.
It's like a safe haven. Man.
It is. Yeah. So when the Game Show Network premiered, whenever that was, I was like, oh, this is the best channel ever.
Let me tell you. Yeah. And,
but the thing that they've screwed up now is they're producing their own game shows instead of showing reruns of the things.
And they're
they
just not
with.
That good.
I haven't watched
I mean, when we got our satellite TV when I was living out in the country, now this was not that long ago. I mean, considering, I mean, it was 2007-08, which I thought was a lot earlier than that, but it wasn't. It turned out, so during the daytime on GSN, an actress by the name of Heidi Bohe and a sports announcer named Fred Rogan, would host GSN Live during the daytime. And did you remember this?
Nope.
So it was so cool. It was like interactive. So what they would do is they would just host reruns of game shows all day. But in between, they would come back like, welcome back to GSN Live, blah, blah, blah. We've got some little trivia games and little puzzles and things. And people would call in and win like trips to Acapulco or something.
There's a game show within a game show.
It really was. But it was so fun. I used to watch it every single day during the summer. And that was really cool. But then at night, they would introduce, like, and this game show here in particular, like, it was so obscure and just, it had a lifespan of 2 months. It was called 20Q, and it was a 20 questions game hosted by an actress named Kat Dealey. And the machine that was the 20 questions machine was voiced by comedian Hal Sparks. But
he's from
Frankfort, Kentucky, right? So, such a cool little game show. I mean, you can pretty much guess what it is. You had two contestants squaring off, and it was a 20 questions game. Some more of my favorite little obscure game shows. Does anybody remember Body Language?
Nope.
Body Language, hosted by Tom Kennedy, who's from Louisville, Kentucky. Pretty much, it was like a game of charades where it was like celebrities would come on, two celebrities would come on, and they would team up with one contestant, and they would take turns like that. You would have a puzzle with fill-in-the-blanks words. And they would act out in charade mode, like the words that were missing. Person, if they got it right, it would fill in the blanks.
Right.
Guess the puzzle, get the money, or the prize, or the points. And it was a really fun game. But I don't think it was very, like Todd Bridges was on there. Dana Hill from National Lampoon's European Vacation has played Audrey.
R.I.P.
Yeah, R.I.P. Vicki Lawrence was on there all the time, Betty White. But it was just a cool show. But I feel like it was kind of obscure, too. Chuck Woolery Lingo, always loved Lingo. And Shandy, I had a big crush on Shandy, the co-host. Yeah, man, just some really big, to tell the truth. But the version that was hosted by John O'Hurley in 2000 to 2002. Wasn't he on Seinfeld?
Yeah, he was Jay Peterman.
Yeah,
and he also hosted Family Feud.
Great host, man. Great game show host. Some of my faves.
So I got very sidetracked, but we haven't mentioned the best game show host name in existence.
Why don't you tell them what that is?
Wink Martindale.
Wink Martindale?
Tell me that is not the best name for a game show host. Just a cheesy...
This is Wink Martindale. We'll see you next time.
Well, Wink, tell them what they've won.
Like, you know, he had like a flannel blazer.
Oh, for sure he did.
You know, and
yeah, I just think that to me that symbolizes the best name probably
for a game show host.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
so I only have a couple of facts about him because I don't think as many people remember him other than the name. But he was born December 4th, 1933 in Jackson, Tennessee. I found this really interesting. He started his career in 1950 as a disc jockey, making $1.02 per week, but his salary was soon doubled.
Whoa.
$2 a week.
Man.
Yeah. His college radio station was the first radio station in the country to play Elvis. And Wink Martindale wanted to interview Elvis, so he called Elvis's house, and his mom answered. And Elvis's mom said he's really nervous and embarrassed, and he'll come on, but only if you guys talk to him off the air and then air it later. So he's like, yeah, sure. So that comes on the show, and Wink doesn't interview him. His other host does, and it was live. But they just didn't tell Elvis about it. But apparently him and Elvis became friends after that.
That sounds dangerous.
Yeah. But anyway, he hosted What's the Song? Gambit, which is a version of Blackjack, and he's most famous for hosting Tic-Tac-Doe.
Tic-Tac-Doe, yeah.
So, but I love the name Wink Martindale.
Does Doe mean money?
It does. Show does. It sure does, yes.
Yeah. Very punny guys.
The last host I want to mention, of course, we could go into dozens more, and he's not even really a host, he's a creator, is Merv Griffin, who created Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy, and you know, all that. So Jeopardy was originally titled What's the Question, and it was hosted by Art Fleming. And actually, I don't know if it ever aired as What's the Question, or that was just the idea. But it says, Merv Griffin's wife, Julianne, just came up with the idea one day out of thin air. She says, they're flying back from Dublin to New York, and he said he was wanting to start a game show. And she says, well, there have been a lot of successful question and answer game shows, but what if you do one where you give the answer and the contestant has to say the question. And then she fired off a couple, like 5,280. And the question would be, of course, how many
feet are in a mile?
And he says, yeah, that's a really good idea. So he, you know, writes it up, submits it to the station, and they're like, yeah, let's do it. So when it originally aired, it was hosted by Art Fleming, and it went off the air. And then there was a short revival in the mid, early 80s with Art Fleming as the host. And right before that happened, Weird Al came out with a song called I Last on Jeopardy. And there are some hardcore Weird Al fans that say that that song, which was popular, was the reason that that show got picked back up. And when it did, that Alex
Trebek was
the host.
It was Alex Trebek.
So Weird Al, some people give him credit for
So
Jeopardy.
When what part of the 80s did this... Did Trebek pick it up?
It's 84?
84 or really? So. And that song came out in like either 83 or 84. Yeah. But they, and I don't know if that's a true thing about that.
What's funny about that is I always remembered that song. That's weird. Who is Art Fleming?
Yeah.
Who is Al talking about?
Yeah. And in the, they do a video, and I guess Art Fleming's in the video. And I'm like, I don't know who this guy is. I guess they couldn't get Alex Trebek.
But he probably contractually couldn't. Or,
well, no, he wasn't the host when they recorded the song.
Oh, yeah. Well, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, because they did the rehash in the early 80s with Art Fleming.
I gotcha.
So, yeah, it was just like a blip. You know, it was a short thing, and Weird Al was like, I'm going to write a song about that, which was a parody of with a, Our Love's in Jeopardy.
The Greg Kin band, yeah.
Yeah.
Baby.
I just thought that was kind of interesting. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, speaking of love being in jeopardy, the last game show that I have to talk about is the MTV classic Singled Out.
That was a good show.
That was a good show.
I enjoyed watching
it. I wonder if it holds up. Like
Chris
Hardwick.
Oh, it's been revived.
No, I mean like the old ones.
Oh, the old ones. I imagine that they can't air them because it's probably not politically correct to do so.
But they brought it back?
It's on, apparently. It came back in 2018 with new host. I don't know where. But what's funny is you pulled Chris Hardwick out, and I was like, Chris Hardwick was the host of...
Oh, yeah.
That was 20 years ago. Well, yeah, it was 25 years ago.
That's where Jenny McCarthy got her start.
Uh-huh. And Carmen Electra. Well,
that's right.
Both of them got their start in Playboy, but it was a short jump from Playboy to MTV.
Yeah. to anti-vax.
Well, I think she may have changed her mind on that. I don't know. But anyway, if you're not familiar with the show, it was basically the dating game, except there were 50 people instead of three. And
they were in a giant crowd, like, smushed together, and Jenny McCarthy was flirting with them.
Yeah, pretty much. They always had two parts of the show. There were 50 women and one guy, and then there were 50 men and one woman. But the first round, they'd whittle them down by asking often the harsh questions, like, or they divided people into categories. All 50 people were either blonde or brunette, or mountains or cupcakes.
Oh, I see what you did.
Yeah. I can't remember any of the categories for guys. I'm sure bald was one of them. And
yeah, probably like hairy chest.
Yeah. And you'd say, oh, I don't like hairy chest. And then all the men with hairy chest would have to like file out past the contestant.
It was basically guess who with real people.
That's funny. It really was, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's like, I don't like girls that wear glasses. And then here they all come. Yeah.
See, I was thinking it was a really sped up version of The Bachelor where they weren't forced into marriage afterwards.
That was a great show.
Yeah.
Would you consider American Gladiators a game show?
Sure. Because
that's right up there underneath like Price is Right for me.
That is a good one.
Hey, and you know, so The Rock had a show on this summer this spring called Titan Games.
Okay.
And it was kind of a good combo of American Ninja Warrior and American Gladiators. Cool. There weren't gladiators competing against, but they were doing gladiator type things, the contestants were. And it was actually a really good show.
Was it?
Yeah. I want to mention a show because so far I've really only been talking about host and whatever I get sidetracked on. There are a couple of shows I want to mention. And by the way, I'm going to say it again. I said it at the top of the hour. We could probably make this show 4 hours long, so we can come back and hit this multiple
I was going to say, this will be first in probably several game shows.
So, and we're not going to do them back to back. Don't worry. You get sick hearing about game shows. But there are a bunch of shows I want to talk about, but I'm going to stick to two for this first episode. One being a show called Solitary. And I found it on the internet about a decade ago. I don't know anybody else that's ever even watched it, and it is the coolest game show. It is a psychology experiment wrapped up in a game show. So let me read you the synopsis of it. Solitary is a reality game show that aired on the Fox Reality Channel, whose contestants were kept in a round-the-clock solitary confinement chamber for weeks on end, with the goal being to be the last contestant remaining in solitary confinement. They win $50,000. No. But it wasn't just that. So they had no contact with the outside world. There were no mirrors. There were no clocks. There were no windows.
So they had no idea how long they'd been in there.
And the only communication they had was with a robotic voice named Hal.
I remember this show. Yes.
So they'd be sitting in the room and Val would be like, it's time to get up. The games are starting. And then the games were insane. They would, it was a octagon that they were in and it was like 8 feet by 8 feet. It was tiny. And they would do things like, all right, so we're going to bring a box into the cube and your only job, you're going to be really tight in there. Like you got to really curl up. And we want you to sit in there for 3 hours. And when you think 3 hours has passed, you come out, and whoever sits in there the closest to 3 hours wins. And there was a girl that was in there, and she's like, okay, I know it's been 3 hours. And she comes out, and they're like, okay.
It's been 5 minutes.
It was 12 minutes. Yeah, I mean, literally, because you have no concept of time. But the guy that won, which I thought was hilarious, he goes, my favorite movie is Titanic. I've seen it 1,000 times. So I just sat there, closed my eyes, and played the whole movie in my head. And when I came out, he was like 3 minutes off. He just like, yes, like I know the whole movie.
Wow, that's pretty good. He didn't get caught up in a middle scene there.
No, he sure didn't. But then another one I remember was they're like, okay, this next game's real easy. We're going to put some marbles in the cage and you just have to count them. And this like conveyor comes
it's
out.
Like thousands
and, like,
of marbles.
A thousand marbles come out and a strobe light comes on. And then the voice is going, 16, 412, oh 2, 5. And so it's just like everything's a mind game.
So I imagine at some point I'd be in there and be like, okay, turn the cameras off. I got to poop.
Yeah, I don't know that. And I've looked and I don't know because they say they're in there for weeks on end.
Well, I would assume that they have like a solitary room and then they have like an outside apartment outside of that room that they have to spend X amount of time in. Like, I don't know.
No.
I don't think so.
Is there a toilet in there or they might have a closed?
It says everything is regimened where like they sleep when they're told to sleep. So. Pods include a meal slot where food and other items would be given to the players. Let me see if it says something about a toilet. Oh, yeah, here we go. There's a lockable door called the antipod chamber where players may use the bathroom, be sequestered while challenges are set up. So, yeah, there is a little – basically, there's a bathroom. So if things come into the pod, they have to go in there and shut the door so they never see another person.
Oh, good. That's fun.
Yeah. So, but it lasted for 4 seasons. And I mean, after I watched them all like back to back, and it did eventually kind of, you're like, okay, I've seen this before. But it's just so different than every other show. Yeah. It's really worth checking out.
I do remember that being on and thought,
I'm sorry. You have a job. You can't be on this show.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much what I was
thinking. I just don't think my sanity could take it.
No.
Like, no.
Well, there's a YouTube show called Mindfield, hosted by Michael Stevens, the guy from Vsauce. I don't know if you all seen it, but he does like psychology experiments, and he put himself in solitary confinement for 3 days in this room. All it was in there was like a bed, some like bland food, and like a toilet, and he just had to sit in there for 3 days with nothing. And he was going crazy. He was going absolutely crazy. So anyway, the last show I want to talk about is a show that is still on the air. And it's a British show, comes on Channel 4, and it's called Naked Attraction. And I may have mentioned this to you guys before.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a dating show. And it, first off, I cannot believe the show.
You know
exists.
What? Now that I think about it, Singled Out would be fine today.
Yeah.
Well, so, but this isn't even, this is a foreign show, isn't it?
Well, it's British, I mean, wow. You can watch full episodes on YouTube, and I can't believe that it's on YouTube. So the show is a dating show. There's a contestant, a guy or a girl, and then there are 6 pods that are completely, they're color-coded, and they're just, you can't see anything in them.
Yeah.
And the host is like, okay, we've got 6 people here that have features we've been told you find attractive, and we're going to eliminate them one at a time until you find the perfect date. And they said, okay, let's show the bottom half of the bodies. And the thing comes up, and everybody is completely naked. Like,
it doesn't show the bottom half of the body. I think the first step is it strictly shows like a foot at the waist area.
Yeah. So if it, and there's no discrimination. So like sometimes it's like a straight couple, like a guy looking for girls, girl looking for guys, but then it may be a gay person looking for, you know, a guy or a girl. It may be a trans person. It may be somebody who just will date anybody. So and they don't discriminate, and they try to make it an educational show where they actually teach you about the human body and, you know, everybody's beautiful. But I mean, they'll be like, okay, here's a girl and she's picking a guy and there are just like six penises. And she's like, I don't like this one. His balls are too long. And just like literally like pointing. It's like, can you wag it back and forth? And they'll like wag. And it's like close up HD shots of it. And then, and they'll do the same with the girls. I mean, you know, whatever. And then they'll zoom up and show like the chest area. And then they show their face. And each segment, they have to eliminate a person. And then they hear them talk. And then eventually it's down to two people. And when it's down to the two people they have to choose from, then the contestant has to go get naked. And they just stand there and look at each other pretty much. And then they go on a date clothed, and everyone makes the same joke. Hey, you look pretty good with your clothes on. But it's not sexy. The show is not at all. I can't quit watching it though, because it's just like, I can't believe that this is on TV.
It sounds like something that would be like a game show in like RoboCop or something.
Right.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
So like absurd, and that would never happen. But
yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's on YouTube. It's called Naked Attraction. But the thing is, you can always tell. Like they'll come up and you'll see their faces, and there's always that one person you're just like, ugh.
Oh,
and they never eliminate that person for the next round because you could tell they're like, ugh. But if I eliminate them now, they're gonna know I think they're ugly. So they always like eliminate somebody else, and then the next round they always eliminate the ugly. It's like, it's so funny if you watch a bunch of them, you can see, oh, that person's not gonna win, but they're also not gonna eliminate this round because you don't want to make them feel bad.
But wait, hold on, you don't want to make them feel bad, but you're like, yeah, your balls are weird.
I'm telling you.
I guess you can't see their face, so it's impersonal.
Yeah. No, because then when they eliminate them, it comes up, and they come out and introduce themselves, and they have to hug
before they walk out. Hell no.
A Mike with the weird balls.
Yeah. No, Mike. No.
I don't know. It's a wild show. So, and it technically is a game show, I think, I guess.
Yeah.
So.
There's definitely winners and losers.
Yeah, there definitely are. Yeah. Yeah. Do you guys have any other...
I do want to make mention that there, if you are an Amazon Prime user and like retro, like 70s and 80s game shows, there is a channel for free to watch on Amazon Prime called Buzzer, B-U-Z-Z-R, and it shows several of the ones that we've mentioned tonight. So definitely worth checking out. Like Body Language is for sure on there. I believe Tic Tac Toe is on there. Alex Trebek's Double Dare is on there. They've got a bunch of Match Game.
So like are these the specifically just from 60s and 70s? Or?
Well, like 70s and 80s, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think there might be some older, like 50s game shows on there as well. That wasn't my favorite era of game shows, so I don't ever watch them. But I do believe there are some on there. Yeah, definitely worth looking into.
All right, well, I guess it's about that time.
Yes, and I'll tell you what, I haven't spun in a while, so I'm going to do that. I'm going to get the wheel.
I'll be right back.
Where are you going?
Where's he going? Is he... Jason, I think he's letting in a studio audience.
Are you serious?
Yeah, there's like a crowd of people coming in.
Matt, where did you get all these people?
Goodwill.
Okay. Well, I'm going to spin, okay?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Come on, baby, come on.
No whammy.
It went all the way around at least once. I think it'll, whatever it lands on.
Strength sometimes.
Oh, hey, it landed on 15 cents. Do you want to spin again?
Oh, I might go over. Yeah, I'm going to spin again.
Okay, spin it.
Come on, 85.
85 without going over.
Come on, 85. Oh, it's 87.
It's actually 87. You went over. We're going to be talking about video games of 1987.
That sounds fun.
Is that a good year?
I enjoy video games from that era. Sure.
I would venture to say that I played no video games in 1987, but I bet a bunch of my favorites came out that I played later.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Only time will tell.
That's right.
Yeah, hey, I know I briefly mentioned Weird Al in this episode, but there's something I didn't mention. We talked about I Lost on Jeopardy, but did you know in that song, the announcer, who's probably not Rod Roddy or whoever.
Rod Roddy!
So after Al loses on Jeopardy, you hear, "That's right, Al, you lost. And let me tell you what you didn't win. A 20-volume set of the Encyclopedia International, a case of turtle wax, and a year's supply of Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat. But that's not all. You also brought shame and disgrace on your family's name for generations to come. You don't get to come back tomorrow. You don't even get a lousy copy of our home game. You are a complete loser."
So, the creepiest thing about that is that you never broke eye contact with me that whole time.
Yeah, I've listened to that song a lot. Got that whole monologue memorized.
Well, if you'd like to be creeped out by Matt's extremely long eye contact, feel free to send us an email about it at thelostartofpodcast@gmail.com.
Tell us about your favorite game shows or your favorite video games in 1987 on our Facebook page at facebook.com/thelostartofpodcast.
And always, please continue to spread the word, tell a friend, subscribe to us on your favorite podcast listening
rate
app
and review
your choice. Rate and review it. Tell us how awful we are or awesome we are.
And tell a friend how awful we are and or awesome we are.
That's right, because no publicity is bad publicity. Tune in next time, because we're going to have something cool to talk about.